Wrestle Talk on the Cable Radio Network. Whether you tune in on satellite or on the World Wide Web, you're listening to the most talked about show on the air. From Raw to Thunder, from Nitro, get the latest SmackDown and talk live with the greatest guests all tonight on Wrestle Talk. And now, here's your host. A man who's covered the squared circle for over 35 years. Wrestling fame photojournalist, Dr. Mike Lado. Time once again to say, what's up, Doc?
Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. And thanks for tuning in to Wrestle Talk here. We'll be giving you two separate full hours. And when we come back from break, after we do the news center and the time capsule and everything, we are coming back with our very, very special guest. A man who is a legend for many, many promotions. He worked throughout the world, most notably, of course, the WWF, All Japan Pro Wrestling, Bill Watts, Mid-South, and UWF throughout Texas. I mean, everywhere, the man has a lot of dignity, and that is the one and only Ugandan headhunter, the great Kamala, the original Kamala, the real Kamala, and we'll be coming along with him. But I was just at one of Kirk White's Northern California big-time wrestling shows. He had Bret Hart there, who is in or on the West Coast, where we are, Northern Cal. He's ready for Sunday's WWE pay-per-view. And Sunday is very unusual for cable. It's the first time two events for us have gone almost head-to-head. They were separated by about an hour. That is the WWE World Wrestling All-Stars, Randy Savage, apparently. So what Bret... And Bret was only able to tape an interview, which I have sitting right here, about a 40-minute interview where he talks about the Olympics, talks about his mother's death, about what he feels is the ruination of the business by WWF. But he doesn't even know who's going to be showing up. But we do know that there will be three great undercard matches. So it'll be a great indie show. But I'm pretty sure Buff Bagwell and Jeff Jarrett and the rest of them will be there. Instead of doing a tussle with Randy Macho Man Savage over who's going to be the commissioner, Savage, I guess, just has assumed being commissioner, which Bret was on their Australian and UK tours, and Bret will have some elevated position because if we do get a chance to play some of the interview, he says, you know, you just can't do it all the time. He does a lot of autograph shows, but I got him to pose with Honky Tonk Man, who Kamala also is no stranger to. He worked with all of these men. And, of course, Honky Tonk Man Wayne Ferris worked throughout Calgary, had a lot of training with Stu Hart before he ever landed back in his native Tennessee. And he's a phys ed teacher now, by and large, most of the time. But he still does independent shows. So Bret wasn't working or wrestling tonight, but he was a very unusual card. Honky Tonk Man and guys like Vicious Vic Grimes, who tomorrow night at the Los Angeles Olympic Auditorium, 45 feet above the ring, and I don't think Kamala would ever... do this, you know, not mat wrestling, not chain wrestling, not classic stuff that we all grew up with since the 60s, but they will be 45 to 50 feet above the Olympic Auditorium ring in Los Angeles. New Jack, who was on our show last week, and Vic Grimes. Now, if Vic Grimes gets done with his big-time wrestling match, they're headed straight out driving to L.A. tonight, but he's going to try to call in and rebut everything that New Jack said. But New Jack is listening to this show because Kamala was actually an idol of his. When I talked later, I've almost been talking to New Jack every other day. I guess, is going to be joining the lawsuit against Paul Heyman. They are putting the bankruptcy in dispute, and Bob Barnett clarified that Heyman didn't want people, he knew people would come after him. So not only did he declare that ECW, which was AKA the HHG Corp, was bankrupt, but he also declared personal bankruptcy, although, you know, he socked away millions of dollars. So that bankruptcy, both of them are going to be challenged. And New Jack also wants me to help him write his book, which I don't know if I have the time to do, but I think that would be an excellent book because, you know, New Jack was talking from his heart last week, as Francine did. Both different perspectives. Francine will defend Paul Heyman to the bitter end. She was with him and the company for a little over 7 years. New Jack is more of a realist, and you know, he really spoke his opinion, and you know, this being Black History Month, wasn't it a fabulous win? As Brett couldn't stop talking about the Olympics. He's way into skeleton, of course, because he owns the Calgary Flames or co-owns it. Couldn't stop talking about the women's hockey win for Canada. That was last night over the U.S. The big one is Sunday. Canada goes in, possibly get a gold medal for the men. And he was talking about the whole skating judging scandal with Sally and Pelletier and all of that stuff. And he was very interested going through both the Japanese magazines I had him pose with. So this Sunday is not only WWA, but it's also same-day Pride, which is Antonio Inoki's semi-shoot group, or most of it's a shoot, hopefully. So they're within an hour of each other. So, you know, that'll be a huge wrestling day. It's a huge wrestling weekend because the Rob Feinstein Little Brown Ring of Honor show is going on, and there's actually some excellent matches there. We'll have to wait and see. I think people will be scrutinizing Rob to see if he can conduct a wrestling promotion with the, you know, with aplomb and honor and stuff. He doesn't always do that with his video library, and I think he even has, I don't know if he's interviewed Kamala, but he has a lot of so-called shoot interviews and best ofs and all of that, and a lot of times the wrestlers don't see any money from that, which we don't like. So, so much happening. Talked to Bobby Heenan, and he says he's still having difficulty talking because his tongue is swollen up. Very unusual. He's having radiation and chemo for throat cancer, which is very sad news for all of us. Bobby the Brain Heenan is one of the big, big, big legends, as is Kamala in this business. But our prayers go out to him. We lost one of the greats today. It's always sad hearing about this. And Bret Hart, and I talked a little earlier today to Ken Patera, who was a winner in the Pan American Games. He was not in the Olympics, as was Iron Sheik, Khosrow Bazeri, who's been on this show. But Ken Patera, I think maybe you guys would like to talk to him. But he was also talking, we got him on the phone, I did, and put Brett on with him, and they were talking about the loss of Sweet Hansen. Sweet Hansen formed one of the biggest tag teams in the 60s and early 70s with Rip Hawk in Mid-Atlantic, the Carolinas. He also worked for a long time in the WWWF, and Ken Patera said, geez, you know, it's too bad he didn't lock up with him or meet with him earlier in his career. So he said he was one of the, told Brett, he's one of the strongest guys ever in the business. When Patera finally got into, or, you know, was when he stayed there the longest period of time, around 78, 79, he said Sweet Hansen was like over 50 and he was super strong. He couldn't believe how strong he was. So Sweet Hansen, sadly, I believe he was around 63, 64, passed away. We all got the news today, and it's always sad when we lose one of the greats, particularly from the territory days. And we always talk about that because versus what we have now, which is basically one promotion. And we want to hear what you think tonight. Of course, when we have Kamal on until he gets pooped, and it's really an honor because he's never spoken publicly, either in Japan for the many, many, many years that he worked for All Japan, and the greatest wrestling promoter, I believe, of all time, Shohei Giant Baba, but never has talked. And, you know, he's, as I say, a human being with a lot of dignity. We'll find out, catch up with what he's doing now. But, you know, the territories are just like a promotion in every major city, in every major state in North America. Now we just have one promotion. So we'll hear your thoughts on what you think with Hall, Nash, and Hogan in there. I personally, just for me, I thought that, you know, Hogan has been fine. Amazing pops, that in-ring thing with The Rock, and I know Kamala knows The Rock's dad and grandfather, Chief Peter Mavie and Rocky Soul Man Johnson, but Hogan last night on the taped SmackDown, when he was locked in that room with Nash, you know, very ineffective speaking. I don't know who ever told Hulk Hogan he could make movies and be kind of believable promo, but maybe it's all the years of whatever, of cutting promos, because when it's time to just, you know, try to be realistic, it just doesn't come across. But it's going to be tremendous. WrestleMania shaping up to, of course, have Steve Austin against Scott Hall. I guess you could call it a match of the century, The Rock against Hulk Hogan. That's about as major as it gets. It was merited a whole paragraph in the USA Today newspaper. And in The Wall Street Journal, twice this week, including today, major reports on WWF's problems with the stock market. The stock's not doing very well. And we don't mean to pick on them tonight, but yesterday in the New York Times, full front page on the second part on you know, their financial woes with the company, photo of Linda and Vince, and Linda even saying she wonders if WWF is a fad. Who would have ever thunk it? Again, we had like 34 to 37 territory promotions. Now we're down to one. When we come back, Kamala, we'll be taking your calls, 800-336-2225. We'll be right back in a flash.
Weeknights on Fox Sports Net. Critics call him controversial. Fans call him one of their own. Others say, boy, does he piss me off. Weeknights at 11. It's The Last Word with Jim Rome. Named by the Sporting News as one of the most powerful men in sports. Named by others as just plain offensive. You decide, guys. The Last Word with Jim Rome. Weeknights at 11. Only on Fox Sports Net.
Hi, everybody. Do you like to win? Then may I invite you to tune in to Ramblin' with Ramsey every Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time or 2 p.m. Eastern Time and register your name and your address. Our hosts allow us to give away complimentary stays at hotels and resorts all around the United States, plus many other items, t-shirts, coffee mugs, oh yes, and chocolate candy. Give RWR a jingle this Sunday.
What do you think? How do you feel? Give us a call and tell us about it. It's toll free, 1-800-336-2225. Give us a call. Join us on CRN today, 1-800-336-2225.
Okay, we are back here at Russell Talk. Kobashi Kenta, that's actually, they pronounce the last name first. So maybe in Japan, all Japan would be Kamala Great. But Kobashi Kenta is on the cover of both Japanese magazines. I've been shooting for both of them since their inception. They came out last night in Tokyo. Gong dated March 7th, Weekly Pro dated March 5th, and Ang Lee is going to be directing. And there may be a wrestling surprise in the Incredible Hulk movie. They're going to be making a movie. Ang Lee, the Academy-winning director, is one of the best directors on the planet, did the current best picture, Hidden Dragon, Crouching Tiger, or Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. He did that one. He's done Ice Storm and a ton of great movies. But our very first guest, it's really an honor having him on, particularly for African American Black History Month. And he has entertained us for many, many decades. Still a very young man, but the Ugandan headhunter, the great Kamala, managed by, you know, just really the cream of the cream, from Fred Blassie to later, of course, Slick, and prior to that, Gary Hart and Skandar Akbar. You know, just because he didn't talk, but he certainly delivered in the ring, and he was so entertaining. He is one of the greatest heels in our modern day business, but he was the guy I think most all of us would agree was hard to dislike him because. He was ominous, scary, a giant guy, but he also kind of brought a sweetness and a friendliness. And when he turned face with Slick and stuff in the WWF, I think fans even went more crazy because they always wanted to cheer him. Great Kamala, are you with us?
I'm right here.
Well, I've got to say, you have had just an incredible career. Did you start? Well, how did you break into the business, and who trained you?
Well, I started with, if you remember, the late Bobo Bazilla.
Oh, really? The greatest of them all.
Yeah, well, he started training me back in 1975, but I was living in Benton Harbor, Michigan. So it was so much snow up there that year until I left there, and I came down, moved down to Arkansas. So I stayed there for a while, and there's a guy named Mario Calento. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah, two-ton.
Yeah, well, anyway, he finished training me. And I give all my credit to giving me my first matches, General Skandar Akbar's first cousin, Frankie Kane. He was known as the Great Mephisto.
Oh, yeah. Frankie Kane comes. He comes to the reunions I was telling you about, both Cauliflower Alley and the thing that's coming up, not this weekend, but the first Friday, Saturday of March down in the, let's see, I'll think of it. It's, but it's the annual deal. And he's there. Frankie Kane, he was the if you remember who Roy Scheier was, he was one of the really the toughest, well, he was also a bigoted, but he was one of the toughest and really is an intelligent, all of his problems aside, promoter for San Francisco. And Frankie Kane was Booker, and he had enough of Roy's abuse, verbal abuse, and he slapped him right in front of the boys, just literally kicked his butt and quit the territory. I mean, Frankie helped train Ray Stevens.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, Frankie was a former boxer. I mean, he was about as big as it gets in the business. The Great Mephisto. In fact, in turn, the Sheik, the original Sheik, Sabu's uncle, they were finally on a tour together for Baba, and they're on the you know, All Japan bus, and Sheik slapped them and said, "That's for stealing my gimmick." So Frankie Kane had slapped Roy Scheier, and then when he was doing his full Sheik gimmick, the Sheik slapped them.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, but I never met Roy Scheier, but I met the original Sheik, though.
Oh, yeah. That was the greatest feud in wrestling, Bobo Brazil and the Sheik.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
It went from the 50s until, I think, the wee early 80s, and, you know, we lost Bobo Brazil, but he was, you know, arguably the greatest African-American wrestler, legend, U.S. champion. He was a champion. The WWF didn't really have a title they could give him when Bruno was champ. They gave him some kind of a title. I forgot if it was called, well, it was there only in WWF, Vince McMahon Sr. But no one ever had a bad word to say about Bobo Brazil. He was, along with Bearcat Wright and Sweet Daddy Siki and Sailor R. Thomas, they, you know, for the early portion of modern day wrestling, they were, that was as great as it gets.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know Sailor Thomas, but I used to watch him on television years ago. And he was an athlete, though.
Now, if you have cable channel ESPN Classic every Saturday morning, really early, 4 on the West Coast and, I believe, 7 on the East, they've got an hour of wrestling following Classic Roller Derby. And I believe tonight they have those three men that we talked about out of the four. They've got Brazil, Sailor R. Thomas, and Dory Dixon taking on Buddy Rogers and Maurice and Handsome Johnny Baron. You know, this is from like 1959.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible stuff. So did you wrestle under your own name as yourself, or did you start initially right away with the Kamala thing?
No, when I first started, the Great Mephisto, he gave me my first match. So I wrestled him my very first match, and I wrestled with Sugar Bear Harris.
Sugar Bear Harris.
Yeah,
huh?
Sugar Bear Harris. And you can't believe who my first manager was.
Who was it?
His name was Percy Pringer. He was the manager of The Undertaker, Paul Bearer. That was my very first manager.
I'll have to talk to him about that and email him, because he was on our show. We did a Terry Gordy tribute when he passed away.
Yeah.
And Bill Moody, the Paul Bearer, works as an agent for WWF now. But what a sweet guy! He's got so many great stories.
Yeah.
And I forgot you worked. I think you worked some big, huge matches, didn't you, at the Mid South Coliseum with Jerry the King Lawler?
Yeah, Jerry the King Lawler. Quite a few of the guys.
Oh man, so you were all. So who came up with, how did the Kamala gimmick all come about? Did Bill Watts come up with that, or?
No, really, Frankie Kane. I was living in London at the time. That was before I got a break. So I was living in London at the time, and I used to talk to Frankie Kane a lot. And I told him that I was going to Africa for a couple of weeks, and he told me, said, "Great." He said, "I tell you what, when you go to Africa, I want you to bring as much material you can back, because I want you to dress like the African people, and say you can make a ton of money here." So that's what I did. So when I moved back to the United States in 1982, and I called up Frank, and Frankie was the one that told me how to dress and everything. So I do all my painting and everything myself. So really, Frankie is the one that came up with the idea.
Yeah, you were one of the very, very first guys to use face and body paint.
Yeah, even though Jerry Lawler came up later on saying that he gave me the gimmick, but Lawler didn't do it.
Yeah, everybody likes to take credit. I think both the Sheik and George Cannon could both claim that they came up with Abdullah the Butcher's gimmick, which I guess is sort of based on Idi Amin.
Yeah.
But yours was really neat because I think you had some sort of a wooden face mask that you would wear, too.
Yeah, I would wear it back and forth to the ring. Now, the one that I have now is identical to the first one that I had, and I brought it from Africa. But the one that I have now was made here in the States, because the one that I brought from Africa, I used it so much and I broke it up so it was just unfit to use.
Wow, so Percy Prinkle was your first manager. That's
yeah.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah, we talked about it now because I was going under the name Sugar Bear Harris, and then we changed it to Ugly Bear Harris, so I had a lot of different names.
Now, does the name Kamala mean anything, or how did you come up with that?
Well, Kamala was kind of like a city in Uganda. Now, I've never been to Uganda, but it's like a city in Uganda called Kampala. I think that's the capital. And so, anyway, I was reading in a book, and it was a person name, but I forget who it was. His name was Kamala, so that's what I came up with.
That's amazing. So, what was your... When you worked with Frankie King, your first match, what year was that? Was that like 78?
Yeah, that was in 1978 when I first started, my very first match. Yeah, because we got in the ring, you know, that's when they first told me that it wasn't on the level, but I didn't know. And so we got in the ring, and Frankie told me, so all you got to do is just listen to me, but I didn't know how to do that. But we laughed and joked about it because I was so big and strong at that time. Yeah, Frankie said, I just had him all across the ring, and he was telling me this. Take it easy now. Just listen to me, big fella.
Yeah, well, you can't have somebody better calling a match than Frankie because, he knows every aspect of the business. That's really something.
Yeah, we wasn't making any money, but still, we had a lot of fun, and it got me experience.
I mean, you worked so many places. Didn't you work for Fritz Von Erich, of course, too?
Yeah, I worked for him. I worked with all the Von Erichs. As a matter of fact, I worked with David a day or two before he died. I worked with him on his birthday, but I forget what money was in, but I know he died right after that in Japan.
Yeah, and Bruiser Brody was over there, and I know you have a ton of Bruiser Brody stories. Particularly, we're going to try to link you up with Emerson Murray, who has already interviewed Abby, Dory, and Terry Funk. Dusty Rhodes for his Bruiser Brody documentary, which is really going to be something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a lot of matches with Bruiser Brody. Matter of fact, Bruiser Brody was responsible for me getting my first biggest payoff.
Wow.
Yeah, so we go way back, and I was supposed to wrestle him again, let me see, about 3 weeks before he passed.
Yeah, what a shame, because Brody had to take care of everything for the family. We lost so many guys in that territory, from Chris Adams most recently back to Gino Hernandez and all the Von Erich kids. It's just and Frank Goodish, Bruiser Brody himself. It's just something. And, you know, you were one of the first guys to really have, I don't know if you'd call it a music video, but around 1980 it was a video that would be sent ongoing to whichever territory you would be showing up next, like Mid-South Wrestling, Jerry Jarrett. The Kamala video would show up before you actually landed there.
Yeah.
And Bill Watts, of course, which was a major, major... So from when the gimmick was started, where did you go next? Tell us sort of, if you can, quickly, if you remember the order of which places you worked.
Okay, when I first started the Kamala gimmick, I went to Memphis.
Okay, that's what I figured, Memphis.
Yeah, for Jared Promotion. I went there and stayed there for about 3 months and left and went to Bill Watts down in Mid-South, out of Louisiana.
And who were some of the guys? Was DiBiase and...
DiBiase, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Marty, who was Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sting, I think his name now.
Did Ron Simmons? Oh, I think you'd already left because you were sort of almost like Andre the Giant, a touring attraction.
Yeah, now Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, Andre the Giant. I work with him a lot in Louisiana, too.
Wow. Those would be gigantic matches. I mean, Bill Watts was really the first guy with the foresight. He's been on our show, too, the foresight to, and I'm sure you worked the Super Bowl, those big Super Bowl shows.
Yeah. Yeah, I worked the Super Bowl show, and I worked a lot of big shows for Bill Watts. Bill Watts was, now to me, with all respect, he was the best promoter that I ever worked for. And I got to say that I take my hat off to him. He was responsible for me having a home to stay in now. You know, that's where I made my money, right there. A lot of people would think it would be the WWF, but it was right there in Mid-South.
Yeah, that's really something. And we're going to be coming on a break soon, but we're going to be letting you guys have a P.O. box, a place to get in touch with Kamala if you want photos or autographs or pictures. If you're a promoter with a quality autograph show booking, now he works, not only does he work, but he also, a lot of us who spend our time 24-7 at this, we all thought you had a farm, but you've got a good 15 acres, and you have some pigs that you raised. Do you have any other livestock?
No, I don't have any now.
Oh, no pigs right now?
No, I don't have any now. I got rid of them. Yes, only thing I just have is my little place here now, and that's it.
Now, you always hit me as somebody who looked like he never, ever aged, but you've got grandkids now?
Yes, well, they must have grandkids.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, it's really something because, and when we come back from break, you guys will finally get really a chance of a lifetime to talk to Kamala. And, you know, the Internet allows people, I'm trying to find some people, as we are with New Jack, because XBW doesn't have a site up, but to get a great Kamala website up, which, you know, would really be a place where you guys could help support him, because a lot of these guys, they don't have retirement, and, you know, they entertain you guys for years, but they didn't really make the money that some of the guys now have just in the last 5 years with these guarantees and all of that. And it's almost a sin, it's just me talking, but a guy like Scott Hall would be earning like $700,000 when, you know, Kamala or an Andre, you know, someone like that really, really, truly entertained people and, you know, was a legend. And when we come back from break, we want to hear about All Japan because he was a mainstay. I don't know how many hundreds of trips he made to All Japan and then spawning off a guy who sort of does his gimmick, but certainly nobody does the gimmick like the original, the real, the true Kamala. So 800-336-2225. And we're going to be bopping through lots of calls. Again, it's late for them. I don't know how long we're going to have them. But this is a man who should have been making $1 million for the time he spent. I mean, he was at a pay-per-view, a huge, huge pay-per-view, one of the casket matches with Undertaker. And what did you told me you made like $20,000 and he made like $200,000. What was
No, that was SummerSlam in London.
In London. That was a big one. I think that was the one where...
The Undertaker made a $500,000, and I made $13,000.
$13,000?
Yeah, $13,000. Now, Undertaker didn't tell me this, and I didn't see a check, but I did see it on the Booker's book, and it had on it how much I was paid, and it had on it how much the Undertaker was paid. Because, you know, the guy's not going to tell you what they're making. I wouldn't even ask them.
That's just a crime. You know, that might have been something that drove a person who was religious, like you told me, before he got into WWF Slick. Ken, I can't remember his last name, but you know, when Fred Blassie retired from the rigors of, you know, going to all of the house shows and managing, and they turned over all his charges to Slick.
Right.
You know, I'm sure he would have, I don't know how outspoken he was, but it's just a crime that somebody didn't say, hey, there's a big inequality, and Kamala was just as responsible for the match and having to do all of the great facials. If you remember, you know, you had a big fear. Didn't you have... a feud with Jake Roberts, you know, they made you overemphasize the big fear of snakes and everything.
Yeah, I had that in the WWE.
Yeah, you did. Besides, I mean, the king of all facials, of course, is Paul Bearer, Percy Pringle.
Right.
Did the best facials ever.
Oh, yeah.
Modern day now, it's, you know, Steve Regal, but I think you were second to Paul Bearer. You had some great facials, particularly matched against Undertaker and Jake Roberts.
Right, yeah, had a lot of them against. Yeah, we worked all over.
is Michael Horn, President and CEO of the Cable Radio Networks, with a message for you. Have you ever wanted a family? Have you ever wanted to raise a child? Well, now through World Vision, you can sponsor a starving child. Through World Vision, you can work to end hunger, end poverty and starvation. You can support a hungry child, a child that needs you. You can write to and receive mail from the child that you support. End hunger. Help raise a child. Make a difference. Start your family now by supporting a starving child. Write to and receive mail from that child. Call World Vision. Make a difference. Get the free information at 1-800-931-6646. That's 1-800-931-6646. Get the free information. Call right now. 1-800-931-6646.
Okay, how long have you been putting it off? A year? 2 years? Longer? You know you need to go. I'm talking about going to the dentist. Well, what if there were a way to get you a free dental exam and x-rays and up to 60% off your dental fees? Would you go? Well, there is a way. It's called the Patriot Dental Plan. Grab a pen, take down this phone number. It's 1-800-284-6801. I'll tell you that number again real soon. When you go to a participating Patriot dentist, you'll receive a free annual exam, x-rays, and savings on up to 60% off all your dental fees. Plus, here's the best part. Patriot has an offer where they'll give you 2 months of the plan absolutely free. You have no risk in trying this dental plan. Come on, you know that dental work you've been putting off for you or someone in your family isn't going to fix itself. Call the Patriot Dental Plan today at 1-800-284-6801. That's 1-800-284-6801. Not available in all areas.
Give us a call. Give us your thoughts. It's toll-free from anywhere in the USA. Here at CRN. The number 1-800-336-2225. Give us a call at CRN. Join us 1-800-336-2225.
Do you smell what the Rock is cooking?
All right, we are back here with one of the greatest legends, not just in WWF, but of course all Japan. And let's take some callers, and we'll go into to that. I guess I'm going to take a man I promised we'd have on first. He helped because I didn't have your most current number, and that's Buddy Huggins, who promotes. He's got a site, all kinds of stuff. Buddy, you're on with the man that you helped me with get on the show, the great Kamala.
Well, thank you, Doc. I appreciate that. And Mr. Harris, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing wonderful.
We've had many
good talks over the time, but I really enjoy hearing you tonight, tell your story. And when you talk about the South and Frankie Kane, you've got to mention George and Gil Cockin, the promoters.
Oh, yeah, they were the one that I was working for.
Yes, sir. And Gil Cockin is in Georgia. They're in Vicksburg. Mr. Cockin is 83.
Is that right?
He's talking to me, and I'm getting interviews with him over a period of time. But your name's come up, and he wants me to, you and him, trade phone numbers, and you guys get together. But he's still real active, got a good mind, and he likes to hear about how people are doing.
Yeah, well, he gave me my first break.
He had the territory going before Bill and before Leroy McGirt.
Oh, yeah.
Jack Curtis Sr., Jack Curtis Jr., goes all the way back to 1940. See, I'm researching the history, and the more I look back, the more I frown on what we got today, because the real wrestling was in the 40s and 50s and 60s.
Uh-huh.
But what y'all guys did in the 70s and 80s is is one of the reasons some of these millionaires are walking around. And like Doc was saying, we sure thought you was one of them.
So I'm a long way from there.
Isn't that something? So, you know, his house is paid off. He's got 13 acres. And you live in Mississippi.
Yes, I'm in Mississippi. I'm
right in and you said Teddy DiBiase doesn't live that far, maybe an hour from you?
He's about 2 hours. He's about 150 miles, 160.
The brunt of your home and what money you do have, you know, it's almost like a Willie Mays when you consider at the high peak of his career, perhaps the greatest player ever in Major League Baseball, made you know, just under $60,000. And some of these schmucks today, Jose Canseco, making whatever on earth he's making, you know, now he's retrying and in the minors and stuff. But it's just, even with time and inflation and stuff, it just it seems criminal. And you and many others, really, and Ernie Ladd, for example, said, you know, the standard for today where these guys are making three, I mean, I think that's pretty standard. Austin and Rock are making a base salary of about $3.5 million. And, you know, so you didn't make your big money from WWF. It was Bill Watts and Mid-South, which later became UWF.
Yeah, it was with Bill Watts. And that's where I made my money. And I always saved what I made. You know, I never been a drug addict or nothing like that. So I didn't never, I watched my money. I never did throw it away. And I remember my school teacher telling me when I was in school to always try to have something of your own. And that's what I did. I saved every dime I had, and I bought me a home. And I paid cash for it, and I'm in it here today. It's a, you know, it's a nice little home. Nothing out of, you know, nothing big or extravagant or nothing like that. But it's home.
But for a guy who, you know, who worked 3-4 decades, you have the wrestling business has no retirement, no Keo, no medical, and that's you know, what we try to help people with. And so what's a P.O. box? How can, if somebody, you know, wants to, you know, particularly if they were a big fan of all the great years and everywhere you worked, if you're a Japan tape trader, the Dave Meltzer tape trader file, of course you've seen Kamala all those times and years and years and years, but what's a P.O. box, you know, people want to get a hold of you, maybe order a photo or an autograph?
Yeah, it'll be, it's P.O. Box 533, that's Senatobia, Senatobia, Mississippi, and the zip is 38668. That's P.O. Box 533, Senatobia, Senatobia, Mississippi, 38668.
All right, no greater cause. How did you get into Japan? Was that Brody, or how did that happen?
No, I can't think of the guy's name now from Japan, but anyway, they called me when I was with Bill Watts.
Giant Baba?
No, it was...
Or Sakaguchi was...
It might have been Sakaguchi. I can't even remember. It was in 1984. So they called me, asked me, did I want to come to Japan? And I told them, yes. Yeah. So I got it okay with Bill Watts because that's who I was working for. And I went to Japan, and I went there for a long time.
Wow, and there was a lot of great names. I know you had matches. And didn't you team with Abdul the Butcher at various points over there?
Yeah. And then the other guy that's, the other guy that's used my name too, Kamala too.
Now, who came up with the idea? Why did they make a Kamala 2, you know, instead of him doing something else? That was Botswana Beast Ben Peacock, but he, of course, came later, and he's smaller. He's not the giant that you are, but why was it Japan that wanted him to become a Kamala?
No, that was Abdullah.
Oh, Abby.
Yeah, Abdullah was responsible for that.
Now, why did he do that?
I don't know, but Abdullah, I get along with him all right, though, but Abdullah is really, just to be honest, he's a cutthroat.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when I told him to his face. So, but anyway, the guy was trying to make a living, so, you know, I didn't bother him about it.
So why couldn't he just stay the Botswana, I mean, the Botswana Beast was like a copy of you anyway.
Yeah, I know it.
Because you were the first, and if you think about it, you were actually, the gimmick was an educative one. You were, in some way, educating people on a different culture. You know, certainly it was a colorful thing. That, but still, some of the native outfit and the painting. No one in wrestling had ever done that before. Nothing.
Oh, yeah, imitated, but never duplicated. We're talking about the one and only Kamala. And I tell you, growing up watching this man in the ring. And seeing the talent that came through the Mid-South, it makes me wish that that days could come back, but it's not coming back. I talked to Bill, as a matter of fact, just this past week, told him that Kamala was going to be on your show, and Bill Watts told me to tell you hi, Kamala, Mr. Harris, and we touched again on the resurgence of the Indies, and it's just not ever gonna seem like want to make that turn. But during the day you wrestled, Mr. Harris, you were like every night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and those towns were supporting, like Jackson, Mississippi was 4,000 people on a Wednesday night. Monday was Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we turned people away. I mean, everywhere I went with Bill Watts, it was a sellout. And one thing I can say, it was a small territory compared to the WWF, but he paid. So that's all that matters.
Was that, you worked with, you know, in front of huge crowds, the Louisiana Superdome and all that. Well, I mean, what was your biggest kick? And you might have worked at the Egg Dome in Tokyo as well, but what was your biggest kick? Say your biggest thrill in wrestling. Was it working in front of all those people at Wembley in London, or?
I'll tell you, my biggest thrill was working in front of all those people in New Orleans, Louisiana, which was not as big as London, but that was my biggest thrill. I don't know why, but it was in New Orleans, Louisiana.
I wouldn't want to put words in your mouth, but would you say the folks really believed, like the night that they had to put a bulletproof vest on Skandal Akbar, because the fans really believe what they see, because you guys kept kayfabe so real that the whole South just honestly believed it? And that's one of the reasons that the Mid-South territory and Texas, and as far as that goes, Georgia, all those places drew so good every night of the week, because
that's why the fans in throughout Tennessee and places like that. And we're going to bring up Josh from I believe it's Columbia, South Carolina, Moolah country, fabulous Moolah country. But those are really good fans because you know, they're not smart. They just believe and they enjoy themselves, and you know, it's hard to find fans like that. And I think they still exist, at least in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Let's bring up Josh also from Columbia, because, Fabulous Moolah's book, she told me it's going to be out, WWF's releasing it very shortly. Josh, are you there?
I'm here.
Do you have some thoughts or comments for Kamala?
I sure do. Mr. Harris, it's an honor to get to speak to you here.
Well, thank you.
I must say you scared the holy living bejesus out of me when I was a young boy.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. I'm actually watching a match from the Mid-South Coliseum right now. I think it was from around 1981 between you and Jerry Lawler.
Oh, okay.
There was big-time electricity.
Yeah, definitely. You can tell the crowd's just absolutely wild. This is, I don't know if you remember, it's where Jerry won via countout after knocking you out with a chair. I really want to ask, I always had understood something about you being afraid of the casket during the casket match. Is that true?
Yeah, well, now, that particular one, I wasn't afraid of, but I am afraid of casket.
I mean, who isn't? Who wants to, you know, I mean, that's just creepy. I don't know. You were the first guy that did the casket matches.
Correct.
I think with Undertaker.
I believe he was the first guy to do the casket matches.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
I don't remember any of them before you.
Yeah, well, I can't either, but I didn't know if I was the first one or not.
I think you were. You know, they kind of really took stereotypes, and you know, I mean, it is still a white man's business in many, many ways, but, you know, taking somebody that's African-American and over-exaggerating the fear of snakes thing or this or that, you know, But I think actually nobody would want to get into a casket until your time, and then you don't have any say so.
Yeah, I didn't want to get in.
The casket match was absolutely legendary with the skits with the Undertaker building the casket, especially for you, and then painting your symbol, the symbols you wear on your chest and on your stomach onto the casket.
We're thinking about this. I don't know if Kamala's aware that Joel Goodhart, who is like the top lead heel manager and announcer for the ECW hardcore promotion. But
He ran the Tri-State up in that area that was the predecessor to ECW, I believe.
Yeah, did Kamala work for Joel Goodhart? I think he did.
Joe Good, the name sounds familiar.
Yeah, the Philly, Jersey area with this incredibly insane, really love wrestling. Wrestling capital kind of turned from St. Louis into Philly, but Joel Goodhart, when he turned face and I guess had a war with some other heel manager who was also in WWF, Cyrus, he came out with your body paint on his chest, and you know everybody knew, oh, he's paying tribute to Kamala, and they announced it as such. But were you aware that that was just like a year ago?
No, I didn't know about that.
Or a year and a half ago, and it got an amazing pop because all of those great Philly fans, they know their history, and they, you know, they knew and loved Kamala. What did those symbols mean? It was like a sun and a moon. Was it astrological, or what was it?
No, really, they didn't have a meaning. It was just something that I'd done.
And did the face paint itself have any, it just made you look pretty scary.
Yeah, just like I used to see them when I was living in Africa. We used to go down in the valleys, and I used to see them paint their face, but not the same as I had mine, but they had theirs painted. And they do that when they're performing in the morning time. And that's where I got it from.
Weren't you the first to use face paint?
Yeah, as far as I can remember.
I think you were the first wrestler he actually used face paint.
Yeah, he was. He definitely was, because that was before even the Road Warriors.
Oh, yeah, because I talked to the Road Warriors. The Road Warriors
copied Kamala.
Yeah.
What did you say to the Road Warriors?
What was the question?
Oh, when you finally caught up with them, what did you say? Hey, you guys are stealing my face paint, or?
No, well, they asked me what type of paint that I use on my face, because the paint that they use on theirs was different from mine, and it was irritating the face, and then it was hard to get off.
And it would peel off their face.
Yeah, so I told them what kind that I was using, and that's what they started using, Sting and
Ultimate Warrior?
Yeah.
I don't think I ever remember seeing your paint peel off. Was yours that much different from theirs?
Yeah, mine would peel off.
Yours would peel off?
Yeah, it would peel off.
I don't remember it peeling off either. He always, looked like a perfect Kamala. It always was there.
Yeah, but it would peel off when I started sweating.
I'm watching this match right now, and Jerry just smacked you over the head with a chair, and it still didn't peel off.
Well, man, probably because I hadn't started sweating, probably.
Most likely. I think this was a fairly short match. I'm not sure. This is kind of a clipped version of it, but it's still an excellent match.
Uh-huh.
Now, Kamala, this is, I think, the anniversary of Andy Kaufman's death. Were you in Memphis when Andy Kaufman came in there for that feud with Lawler?
No, I wasn't.
But you were there. Of course, you know Jimmy Hart.
Yeah. Jimmy Hart managed me for a month or two.
And Hulk Hogan, you had some big battles with Hulk Hogan,
ooh,
too, of course.
I had a lot of them. I had a lot of battles with Hogan.
Didn't you kind of headline the circuit with Hogan for a while?
Yeah. Yeah, the first one was Andre the Giant. I went around the circuit with him, and after that it was Hogan. I went around a few times with Hogan.
And I'm sure, Andre and the Ultimate Warrior?
Yeah, the Ultimate Warrior.
What was Hogan like to work with?
I tell you, Hogan, to be a champion, Hogan was the best, and I felt comfortable with him. More than anybody, him and Bret Hart, that I ever worked with. Yeah, so he was real easy to work with. I talked to him a few days ago. Hogan is a real gentleman. He was real easy to work with.
He's back in the WWF. It might be a reason to just turn it on to see. Have you seen him when he plays heel now? I guess he grows part of his beard out. It's part black and part dyed.
No, I hadn't seen it.
You haven't seen Hollywood? Did you watch any of that WCW? You probably didn't have a whole lot of time, but you watch Ric Flair and all that stuff.
You mean since he's been in WWF?
Well, no, before that, when there was still a WCW.
No, I never did watch it. Like I said, if the kids is watching it, then I come in and watch it a little bit with them. But, you know, I have a bit of taste in my mouth for wrestling, and especially the WWF, so I just, you know, I don't ever watch it.
Did you ever wrestle Ric Flair?
No, I never wrestled Ric Flair. I wrestled tag with him, but I never wrestled him.
I tell you what we need in the WWF now. We need NWO Kamala.
Yeah?
Maybe Hogan, you know what, when you talk to him the next time, tell Terry, hey, you know, they kind of cheated you big time on money that you were owed, so maybe now, yeah, I mean, wouldn't that be something, NWO Kamala, that would be kind of fun, because, I mean, he already has the black and white face paint and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good.
With the bitter taste, because you felt, when did you actually retire? Was that your last big stint in WWF?
No, my last match in the WWF, I had a 2-year contract, but it wasn't a money contract. It just was a contract to stay there for 2 years. But after they put me with the Ultimate Warrior, which I like to starve to death with the Ultimate Warrior, he was making big money. And
he couldn't wrestle worth a lick.
I know. We go in the ring and
you
we
can't understand his interviews either.
Yeah, we stay in the ring about 2 minutes and that was it. So that's the way Vince wanted it, going in and beat me, so he just killed me off. And during that time, my sister and my niece got killed. So anyway, I came home to the funeral, and when I went back, I stayed there about another month, and Vince, he got rid of me.
33% of all pets get lost at least once in their lifetime. Hey, it's Mitch Wilder for Amazing Pet Discoveries. If your pet were lost and they could speak, here's what they probably say. Help, I am lost and I can't find my family. I'm really nervous. Because pets get lost and they cannot speak our language, Pets Talk was developed. It's a talking pet safety caller. You simply record your name, telephone number, and pet special needs if they have any. When a good Samaritan finds your dog, the caller provides all the essential recorded information for a quick return. With Pets Talk, you have the comfort and security of knowing that if your dog gets lost, they will be found. Call 1-877-451-0138 for Pets Talk. That's 1-877-451-0138 for a good peace of mind. And don't forget to listen to my show, Amazing Pet Discoveries, every Saturday and Sunday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, we are back with Kamala, and our phone lines are lighting up like really never before. And you know, I always try to do my best to have a superstar for you. And guys, do me a favor too. When you call in, you know, just remember, it's radio. Sometimes the equipment, not the personnel, but the equipment can act up. And try to be nice. You know, if you're nice, we'll put you on. If you're not, we won't put you on air. Let's bring up, and I want to say our last caller wanted to say Kamala is one of the great legends, and he really puts you over. We all do. I mean, you really entertained us, but. I want to bring up Philip from Marshall, Texas, who trained with Skandar Akbar. But Kamala, it seemed very weird, you know, it went way over the bounds of cartoony stuff when they turned your face. Were you unhappy when they did that?
Yes, I was. I didn't like being a baby face because I didn't think that I got over as a baby face.
And no, I mean, people wanted to like you because I don't think anyone, you know, It was hard to hate you. We could fear you, or at least my interpretation from hearing lots of fans. We'd fear you, but and a lot of respect, but you emanated a lot of likability, even when you were at your most heelish and awful. But then, you know, it just kind of, you didn't need to be turned face because everybody liked you anyway. And I think you were always very, very polite and nice to fans, you know. I mean,
right.
Signing autographs away from the ring and stuff like that, but yeah, it just seemed very weird. It was like a cartoon. Well, it's how WWF was. It was cartoony.
Yeah, I know. That's what Vince was doing. He was just trying to kill me off, and when he killed you off, you know, there's no way else to go anyway, so he was just killing me off so he could get rid of me.
And you know, I would really bug Hogan, you know, because he always liked having a big, unbeatable, unstoppable monster. And you were one of them, like King Kong Bundy, etc.
Right.
I bet you never saw the revenue you should have from all your action figures.
Oh, the first action figure they made was in 1987, and I never got a dime. And in 1992, they came out with another one, and Vince was telling me about all the money that I could make, and so I might have received $30,000 of all these years from royalties.
Yeah, because I've got all of them, the LJN figure and then the Hasbro ones.
Yeah.
And there were several different Hasbro ones.
Yeah. So really, $30,000 is about all I received.
Well, Well, Philip from Marshall, Texas, you're on with one of the great legends. Philip, how are you doing?
Pretty good, Kamala.
Hi, Philip.
How are you, bud?
I'm all right. How about yourself?
Man, it's an honor to speak with you.
Well, thank you.
I've been trained by General Skandar Akbar. I go by War Machine. But if anyone in the business had to be awesome, it was you.
Well, thank you.
I understand you're looking for work. We have a show March the 8th at the Marshall Civic Center.
I can't hardly hear you.
Yeah, Philip, why don't you go to his P.O. box? We'll give that out several times. I'm not sure if Kamala wants to get back in the ring, you know, like many. And Hulk Hogan's got some of the worst knees in the business, and he has to take care of them like Steve Austin. But definitely for autograph shows, as long as it doesn't conflict with his work, you know, he works real hard at his regular job, like so many people. Bret Hart's got to do his newspaper column now to keep it going. He's not as wealthy as you would think either. Yeah, Philip, you've got a bad line. We can hardly hear you, but again, Skandar Akbar, Gary Hart, two great legends, and you know, two of the great, 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 great managers who managed Kamala. Let's go to James from West Virginia. James, you're on with Kamala.
I got two questions. Okay, Kamala, did you ever wrestle Magnum T.A.?
Yes, I wrestled him a lot of times.
What did you think about him?
Well, he was real nice. He was real good. He was good to work with.
I got it something. How about Dusty Rhodes? You must have had some classic ones with him.
Yeah, I had a lot of them with Dusty Rhodes. Yeah, so he was good to work with too.
Real colorful. You know, he stole his old gimmick from Thunderbolt Patterson.
Yeah, Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that the way he talked.
Yeah, because he didn't sound like that in like 1968 or 69. He didn't do. And if you talk to him, he doesn't sound that way. You know, but when he does his Dusty Rhodes voice.
Oh yeah, right.
He does. But yeah, I'm sure. And Blackjack Mulligan, I think you must have met all the top
guys. Oh yeah, yeah. I don't think I ever wrestled Blackjack Mulligan, but I was around him for a while in the WWF.
So what year was it that, let's see, we're working for Bill Watts. Did you say 82 was your first?
Yeah, 1982.
Was your first All Japan match?
1984 was my first All Japan.
And you worked a long time, very sad, and the face of Japanese wrestling changed when Baba died.
Yeah, I heard about Baba passing. I had been out from order for a few years then.
Well, we're sneaking into our second hour of Wrestle Talk. We'll take a short time out. Kamala, can you hang with us a little bit longer?
Yeah, sure, no problem.
All right, I know it's 3 hours later, so...
Yeah, but I don't have to get up in the morning, so I'm all right.
All right, 800-336-2225. James, hang tight, because I know you got a second question. Philip, I'm sorry. Give us a call next week if you're training right now to be a wrestler in Texas. And Buddy Huggins, I want to thank you as well. Joe from San Bernardino, stay tight. When we come back, we'll have a full, fresh hour, a lot more info, a lot more news of what's going on, and we'll also see what you thought of SmackDown and Raw. We'll be right back with Kamala in just a couple minutes. Yeah.